dried cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Singing song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on what's left of this Friday morning. Time permitting, and I got a bunch I'll try to get to. It probably will leave some on the table here, but 251-343-0106 on the text line. Joining us now, we do it every Friday, our returning champion. I'm very pleased to bring on State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing great. It's a beautiful day.
Well, thank you for coming on. We do appreciate it. Settling in with a new president pro tem, it just seems like, kind of talking to some of your colleagues, you know, we won't see a big noticeable change, but I believe it was Senator Orr we had on yesterday, and we got to talk about a little bit about what he said, but he said, expect a little more openness about the process with the new leadership change.
I certainly think so, I'm excited about Senator Gudger being the pro tem. He's a good friend, he's a good guy, and he's very transparent. And I think, that's certainly reflective in the vote that we had and him being elected pro tem. And I'll agree with Senator Orr. I don't think you're going to see any significant changes, at least for the balance of this quadrennium. I think Senator Gudger is smart in saying, let's kind of keep things as they are right now and get through the balance of this quadrennium. We've got budgets that are less challenging or more challenging than they have been in the past, keep things kind of steady. And then, he'll make changes as he sees fit moving forward in the next quadrennium and after that. Cause it really is, coming in the last real year, the quadrennium before elections. And so this is the last time to get work done. And we don't need to upset the apple cart right now.
Yeah. Well, this is, like you said, it happens immediately. Well, it doesn't happen immediately. You got a situation where, I guess, Senator Reid is not leaving till the end of the year. Senator, this is one of the questions I had for Senator Orr. We're talking just like looking at, you keep hearing these rumblings about taking another shot at gambling. And, we talked about this some last week. But, look, there's the potential here that you lose a yes vote with Senator Reid's departure, but it won't be till April till whoever wins that seat is sworn in. And right now it looks like State Representative Matt Woods is the front runner there. He was a no vote on gaming. So potentially you have another no vote to overcome, which doesn't fare well for the gamblers. But fourth year of a quadrennium, then you look at that, not much happens in that fourth year. And then beyond that, we'll have a new governor. And I don't think any of the front runners for governor right now are really all that interested in running on a gambling platform. In fact, they'd probably run against it to win a Republican primary, I would think. This early window right now, these first couple of months, that's it, right? I mean, it is still a long shot, but I think these gamblers, these people who want a gambling bill, be it lottery or whatever, comprehensive, are at least trying to figure out if it's feasible to try this one more time this year.
Well, I would agree that it's being discussed, but I think it's an oversimplification to say, this person's pro gambling or this person's anti gambling, especially in the Senate. It's a matter of how do we get, the mix right in not expanding gaming and getting our constituents on the lottery in a manner that's acceptable to enough senators to get this done. And so I think to say, this guy's pro-gambler, this guy's anti-gambler, is probably an oversimplification. Now, having said that, I do think your analysis on when to get it done and how to get it done is probably spot on. It needs, if it's going to happen, it will need to be something where a plan that both chambers can agree on and that individual members that are important in order for the bill to pass have signed off on to get circulating and get moving if it's going to pass. And I'll be honest with you, Jeff, I just haven't seen that yet. I haven't seen anybody wanting to or engaged in picking up the ball and running with it yet. And if so, they need to avoid the problems of the past of talking to just a few members and and thinking that that's going to be enough to get it done. You need to look at members' comments from the past, where they are philosophically, what they're willing to do, what they're not willing to do. And if you want to get it done, you need to craft a bill around that.
Let's talk about something else. The health sciences school in Demopolis, the proposed health sciences school. Now, they got a big shot in the arm from Bloomberg, and they're I guess, came to the state for money for this health sciences school in Marengo County. But we keep hearing a significant cost overrun, perhaps $20 million. Sarah Orss is not coming out of the ETF. They need to figure out ways to raise money on their own. Does that sound about right? I mean, the health science school guys, if they want to come back to the Alabama legislature, that's probably barking up the wrong tree.
I'd rather just cancel the program altogether. I wasn't in favor of it to begin with. I didn't vote in favor of it. I don't think it's an effective use and efficient use of taxpayer money, and I'd rather than cancel the thing altogether. But I'm appreciative of Senator Orr taking that stance. He said specifically on the floor and in committee that this was all they were getting, and it wasn't going to be any more. And I remember specifically saying, hey, we've done this before on prisons and road projects and everything else. It's going to be more. But this administration has a habit of getting its foot in and then saying, oh, look, we need way more than we thought we were going to need. And so now we're in this pickle, and we can't finish these prisons or this road or, gosh, the list of projects go on and on. And so this is kind of par for the course. And I'm ready to hold them accountable and say, no, we're not going to do this. We're not going to go down this path because you got some free money from somewhere to do something and goaded us into legislature into giving you, you know, enough money to do an inadequate job of actually completing the project. No means no, and I'm done with it.
we'll put you down on that as a no vote for sure. So some other things, this Medicaid expansion talk. Now, yesterday or Wednesday, I should say, Ted Haas from Blue Cross Blue Shield was talking to the county commissioners, your former association there, and selling the virtues of sort of, I believe you called it Medicaid light or Medicaid expansion light, I should say. What do you make of this? Is this something that's even politically feasible in this environment to start going down this path of expanding Medicaid?
Well, first of all, I'm encouraged by people realizing that expanding Medicaid in Alabama is the wrong thing to do. We have seen here in recent news stories, plenty of evidence of why we shouldn't do that. We've seen huge increase in projected costs for state employees, for our teachers, insurance, and we have seen that those changes are based on simple changes in the federal government, right? And so the state can be hooked on hundreds of millions of dollars more, to fund those programs just because there have been changes at the federal level. And that is very true for Medicaid expansion as well. As a matter of fact, I think there's something like 15 to 17 different states that have automatic reversion clauses in their Medicaid expansion bill that says, hey, if the feds quit paying more than X amount of money, we're going back to being a non-expansion state. And so I actually think that's something that President Trump should do to push through Congress. Be one of the quickest ways to save money is to go, you know, to repeal that part of it. But the, you know, what Blue Cross and Blue Shield is proposing from a Medicaid light standpoint is a half measure. It's not something I'm particularly tickled about, and probably not in favor of as I look more into it. But it's not something that I'm diametrically opposed to as I am to Medicaid expansion and more federal spending.
It's just that the Medicaid expanders, they don't ever have a good, you know, what happens? Why are you willing to obligate the general fund to this? And I don't think maybe people just don't realize like what a burden that is. And it's guys like me and the media need to do a better job of this. But I mean, look how much money we spend on like roads and bridges or on, criminal justice or what all the stuff the state does outside of education versus Medicaid. It's astounding.
The entitlements kill us. And that's where the budget is at the federal level, and it's where it is at the state level too. And a lot of it flows through from the feds, don't get me wrong, but it is one of those things that a small change at the federal level can absolutely tank the general fund budget overnight. And we end up in a spot where, oh, we're entitled. We have to do this. We must do this. We've said we would. We do not want to end up in that situation. And so that's my major concern. My other very real concern is the reasoning for doing this. And I think it's just misguided. I think there's this whole conversation about this will fix rural hospitals. No, it won't. You know, this is not going to fix rural hospitals. And so there are a lot of members that get excited about voting for something that they think is going to do something that they hope will fix their particular ailment in their particular community. They haven't read enough into the policy part of it to understand this is not a panacea for rural hospitals, will not fix rural hospitals. It'll just prolong a business plan that needs to be revised to deal with what is the reality in the marketplace.
Rural hospitals, right? It's because people are moving away from your township or wherever, and there's no customers for said hospital. And they become zombie hospitals if you keep them open because there's nobody there to go to them. And that's the story we're not getting told here. It's just like, oh, you got this people who are going to be underserved, and they're going to have to drive 2 hours or whatever. I don't even know where that has to be 2 hours to anywhere in Alabama without being in a major city seems a little far-fetched, but that's what they will tell you. And it's just because, well, there's nobody living there. So why do we need, even if you expanded Medicaid, would that justify having a rural hospital in these places?
And that's when these folks abandon the argument about healthcare altogether because they know they can't make that argument. And then it becomes an economic development argument. So all of a sudden we're expanding Medicaid for economic development. Come on, that makes about as much sense as a West Alabama corridor.
Well, I hear that's coming along swimmingly there, Senator, but I haven't been up that way in a couple of months.
Maybe a dog paddle. It ain't going fast.
Well, I need to get up there to go see some fish hatcheries and pine trees. The other thing yesterday we talked about with Senator Orr, you started to make this about that, but Senator, I didn't realize this, but this overtime exemption and stuff, the tax there, and really, you have this weird situation. Now, we got Anthony Daniels on the show coming on next week, but you have this potential where you have a pro-tax-cutting Democrat in Daniels versus Senator Orr, who sounded like we need to do something to cap this. To make it not be as such of a burden on the ETF, because look, this overtime tax exemption is costing us way more. We missed the estimates. In fact, they weren't even close. They're like 5-6-fold of what we thought it would be. What do you make of this overtime tax discussion?
We missed the estimates. That's correct, and I'll agree with him on that. We missed the estimates by 4-5-fold. He's not wrong there either. But at the end of the day, if he thinks that the Republican Party and Republican legislators going into an election season are going to be the people that want to tax the working Alabamians more, that's a really hard sell. And I just don't think that's going to happen. The Republican Party and conservative legislators should want to cut taxes on working Alabamians. This does that. We're trying to increase our workforce participation rate. We're trying to get more people off of Medicaid and get them back to work and other, you know, government subsidies. Sorry, but I think putting more people in, more money in people's pockets is a good idea. And I think it's going to be a hard sell to do that. Not to mention the fact that ETF is flush. It still is. It is still seeing growth. And they're talking about trying to spend even more money to redo the foundation program right now. So, I think this is what conservative Republicans should do, is give money back to the people. I think it's a very principled argument, a principled position, and one we ought to live by. And that's the best way to keep the growth of government under control, is to cut off its spending wherever we can. And that's what this does.
That was my follow-up question with Senator Orr, was like, well, what about this? I mean, you talk about the health of the budget, and I appreciate the impulse for responsible budgeting, but the growth of government here and cutting spending, where are we talking, you know, why aren't we talking about that? Essentially, it was this. It was, he responded by saying, well, good luck with that. I mean, teacher pay raises and new schools and all of these demands on the education trust fund right now. And he also mentioned the next penny on the grocery tax. Make it a little hard to have that discussion, but we're not even having the discussion about reducing the size of government. Are you limiting the growth of it? It's just, well, what are you going to do? This is the way it is.
We can do both at the same time. We can walk and chew gum. We can reduce spending and budget responsibly at the same time. There's plenty of money in the ETF, and the argument that we should cut the, you know, or reinstate the overtime tax in order to cut grocery tax, it's just circular logic for me. I'm sorry, that doesn't make any sense. Let's keep the tax cuts we have in place for working Alabamians that are absolutely incentivizing people to work more. That's a good thing. We are controlling the growth of government, which is a good thing. And I'm not buying the arguments to the contrary. And I think it's a real hard sell in election season, and rightfully so.
I mean, that you're right about that. Is it hard? It's hard to see a lot of your colleagues, both in the House and the Senate, cheerleading this through and making it a priority with the cap.
Well, you know, government always wants more money. I appreciate where Senator Orr is coming from. He's got a tough job managing the education trust fund, and I'm sure he'd like more money in order to manage it. But I like constraining government, and one of the things I found is the easiest way to constrain it is to starve it. And I think that's you know, that's true on the federal level, it's true on the state level.
Senator, got to leave it there. We're out of time, but we always appreciate the insight. Safe travels back from Arkansas.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you having me on.
State Senator Chris Elliott there making his weekly appearance. We got to get a break in here. We shall return. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on What's Left of This Friday Morning. Coming up on the program on Monday, State Representative Shane Stringer, Del Jackson, WVNN, and Yellowhammer News, and Stephanie Smith of the Alabama Policy Institute. So please make sure you tune in for that. Please ask your guest to explain how the state would revalue personal vehicles. Sorry we missed that opportunity. Toothless Bammer says Mitch in his wheelchair self is still in charge of the Senate Rules Committee. He's going to fight Trump at every move. Time for new Senate to tell him to move on. Community notes want to be, they can't vote, but they can be president. Makes sense. We know that was, but community doesn't want to be, you know, that they're playing fast and loose with that prosecution. Captain Jeff, I love the show. As far as popularity of Tommy Tuberville is trying to omit Social Security, be viewed as a tax is huge. Garland Gudger was great on American Pickers. That's right. He was on American Pickers. I saw a friend of mine and I were dining at Central in Montgomery one night, and over there is Gudger and the American Pickers cast, over there. Dad, Jess, she's just not novel. She feels the same old cookie cutter, new face politician who spits out cliche after cliche, and she's just giving no reason to think there's anything other than a stereotypical corrupt Alabama politician. That being said, I do hope I'm wrong, and I hope she proves me wrong. At this point, however, it just feels like more to say, but you're talking about how it feels. Dad, how it feels is not what it is. Like what tangibly, her rhetoric makes her seem like a corrupt Alabama politician because she sugarcoats things. I need something more than that. I need something more than that to understand where these harsh feelings. There's no innocent to prove a guilty. There's no due process here. This is not what we do. Kenny Britt voted for confirmed Charles Q. Brown as chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff. Of course, the coach opposes confirmation. Does this type of behavior? That's a tough, tough vote there. Anyway, coming up here shortly, Midday Mobile, Sean Sullivan broadcasting from the West Mobile Bureau. We're going to figure this out, how to do this handoff while he's
now adopted the Jeff Poor approach to radio remotely. So we'll do we'll get to work on that. But as for me, I got to get out of here. It has been a pleasure. We'll try to do better on Monday. Sorry, folks, forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.